Welcome into this Thursday edition of ESPN FC. I'm Sebastian Salazar. Great to be with you. I'll be joined in just a little bit by Jan Agafjorthof and Shaka Hislop as we look ahead to the weekend in the Bundesliga. Some big news involving Timo Werner and Chelsea. Stevie Nicol and Jan will help us tackle that. Plus, it was 38 years ago today that Barcelona signed a young man by the name of Diego Armando Maradona. Sidlo and Ale Moreno will help us look back on that. But we begin with yesterday's news out of Germany. The DFB, the German Football Federation, deciding against any punishment for the four Bundesliga players that protested the killing of George Floyd over this past weekend. Of course, George Floyd, an African-American man that was killed in police custody in the United States in late May. For more on this, we bring in the aforementioned Shaka Hislop, Jan Agafjorthof. Shaka, the DFB also deciding that any future protests linked to Floyd would go unpunished. What do you make of their decision?
I think it's the right thing. And to use FIFA's term, common sense. They've showed good judgment in this, given the climate of the situation, given the response. Not just in Germany or within football or here in the US, but globally. I understand the need to kind of prevent overly political statements when it comes to celebrations in football, but this is so much bigger. This is a human rights issue that I think we all identify with, and the DFB showing good judgment in not just delaying or saying that nobody's going to be punished for now, but also allowing people to continue to go ahead and voice their own concerns and support.
Jan, it sounds like the DFB were considering at least punishing these players. What's been the reaction to this decision then in Germany?
Well, I think that they considered to look into it because we have the same with Udja in 2014 with the Ghana thing that happened, and he was warned as well. I think that the pressure on DFD, the Deutsche Fußballverband, was so tough they couldn't do anything else. But I agree with everything that Shaka said, and I think that this could be a major thing, because now I think that the organization like UEFA and FIFA have to follow up. They can't just use this as a way to say, okay, look, we'll tell the players, good that you get involved with these human rights issues, that is great, but then they have to follow it up themselves. When we have national games, when black players will be booed at or different sounds doing that, then they have to empty stadiums. These silly fines they're giving out, that is not respect to the players who have this. So I hope now, because the governing bodies are the ones who got to fill in the sanction, and the players could be the great ambassadors for these values, as they did. But it's going to be interesting, because we have to make a difference, because what McKenney, Sancho and Hakimi did, it was different than Thuram. Because Thuram, he was doing the celebration, but the other guys, they put messages on the shirts. And FIFA and DFB say now, well, you can have that. So it's going to be interesting to see where they will put the limit in the future for what kind of message you can bring.
We should also, of course, note that of the four players that protested George Floyd's killing this past weekend, none were white. However, in recent days, more players from around the Bundesliga have spoken out. The latest, Joshua Kimmich of Bayern Munich.
We as a player, in Instagram or in the social media, we can take our voice and use our power to reach the other people that this won't happen in the future anymore. And I think, everybody has to stay together and fight against this racism in football and in the normal social life.
Yeah, one world or one club, one football team, and it doesn't matter if you're black or white. And we as a footballer, like Sancho, we have a lot of power to reach other people, to be a role model and to say something, because what we say, the people outside listen. And so this is a big chance to take a statement. Maybe we can do something. We maybe have to do something, because we cannot give something like this place.
Shaka, what is the impact of players like Joshua Kimmich, specifically white players, lending their voices to this protest?
I think it's monumental. Listen, we've been saying for some time that we needed the support of our white teammates, of our white neighbors, our white friends in this, what is a human rights battle. But for quite some time, for far too long, we've not had that kind of support. And as a result, any movement, any kind of progress has been stunted. But now, with everybody adding their voices, and you're seeing that not just in the players speaking up, but when you look at the diversity of the marches across the world, you understand why it's having the kind of impact that it is. And make no mistake about it, if it weren't for the kinds of numbers that you're seeing marching in the streets all over this world, you would not have the DFB taking as understanding a stance as they would. Here in the US, the NFL themselves coming out and making statements. That speaks to some turnaround from what we witnessed with their treatment of Colin Kaepernick just 4 years ago. This is huge that everybody's joining in, and it's having a real impact.
All right, let's keep it in the Bundesliga. Take a look at the weekend fixtures. Action starts on Friday, the lone match Freiburg against Mönchengladbach. Leipzig and Dortmund are both at home on Saturday. Bayern Munich visits Bayer Leverkusen on Saturday as well. That's a big one. Leverkusen in fifth, just out of the Champions League spots on goal differentials. We take a look at the odds for Saturday's match. The two sides, they did meet in Munich in November. Leverkusen won that match 2-1. Despite that, Munich are still pretty heavy favorites in this. Jan, Dortmund had their chance to make this a title race. What do you think of Saturday? Will Leverkusen take advantage of their opportunity?
Well, hopefully they will, because first of all, I think that Favre did a mistake when he didn't put Sancho and Can in from the beginning. Hopefully Peter Bosch will do the right thing tactically. I think this it's been impressive what Leverkusen have done in this term. They got a great balance in their team with Kai Havertz, with Bailey and Bender and all these kind of. I like the balance in the team. It's a team to. It's good to watch. Having said that, we know they're playing Bayern. Talking about Joshua Kimmich that we saw with his leadership and everything. This young generation, they look massive at the moment. But hopefully, I mean, there are some of us are praying every year that the title race is going to be tighter in Germany. I think this is the last chance. Dortmund playing at home against Hertha Berlin, and Leverkusen maybe they could beat Bayern this time. It would be great for those of us who love German football.
Shaka, based on what we've seen so far from Munich since the restart, any evidence you think this might be the spot they slip up?
No, I don't. And listen, I understand, you know, Leverkusen had a good result against Bayern earlier this season, but this is a different Bayern that we're seeing right now. And the reason that they've won, what is it, 8 titles in a row, is because at this point of the season, they are simply too strong, too consistent, and too experienced. And you saw that against Dortmund. Despite their good start, somehow Bayern Munich came away and really were in cruise control during much of the second half. I expect nothing to change as far as their approach, as far as their dominance. This is a race further down in the table when we talk about Champions League places, but I just don't see Bayern Munich slipping up and making this anything of a title race.
Jan, hopefully you can shed some light on this next story. Bilder reporting that Jadon Sancho and some of his Borussia Dortmund teammates got a haircut at home. Not the big problem, but apparently there are pictures where the hairdresser didn't have his mask on, which would be against social distancing protocols laid forth by the Bundesliga. Is there any chance that Jadon Sancho or his teammates could face punishment over this?
I've spoken to different people, different sport directors in Germany today. I was also listening to the press conference of Dortmund with Fab and Sork, and I also spoke to a source of mine at the club, and I feel this will not be any punishment. The other thing is that they're reporting that Sancho was traveling back to England during this corona time, which is a quite serious thing that shouldn't be done. Dortmund are stating that they don't know anything about it. They say this is not true. But I think for the 5-6 players, I mean, we all need haircuts. And when I have a look at me, I need a haircut too sometimes, maybe today. But there is reasons for we having rules. There are rules for the Deutsche Bundesliga who the whole world look at, and the players need to behave. And sometimes I feel that the vaccine for COVID-19 will be sooner there than the vaccine for stupidity. Because if you're breaking rules and at the same time putting on social media, it's like unbelievable. I can't believe it. And I saw Sork this today at the press conference. He's just shaking his head. What's going on? Okay, so here's the thing. We break a rule, maybe. Let's make a photo. Let's take off the gloves. Let's take off our all protections that we do. I can't believe people are doing this. And there is a story to this, remember. And I give Sancho, because Sancho is now a superstar of football. He's 20. I will give him that. But of course, there is a history where he was delayed back from a duty with his national team. Then there was a story in the papers with a golden steak, whatever that is. And now this thing. And there were six players at this hairdresser. But his stupidity, well, unbelievable.
Jan, what about Jadon Sancho on the field? He's been linked everywhere. I think the latest is Real Madrid. Is there any talk in Germany, any hope at Dortmund that they could keep him?
Well, in Germany or in Dortmund, they are always praying to keep their players. And at the end of the day, they will lose them, won't they? I think that I got a feeling that last summer there was done a Cristiano Ronaldo kind of Manchester United deal when Sir Alex Ferguson said to him, listen, I can't let you go to Real Madrid now. Stay for another year. Do as good as you can. And certainly he did. And then they will let him go. Against Paderborn in the first half, they won 6-1 at the end. In the first time, the half, they were terrible. But in the second half, unbelievable. And Sancho scoring his first hat-trick at senior level. He is on fire. He's doing assists. He's 20. He's English. There are a lot of English clubs who will spend some money to get him. And I will be very surprised if he's not going this summer. And sometimes I feel that Dortmund just saying, hopefully we'll have him here as well next season. And then they kind of know that Sancho is a lost case for them.
Shaka, when you look at Jadon Sancho, that career trajectory, talk about a club like Manchester United. We know it would be a pressure cooker. Is there not at least a case to be made that at 20 years old he could benefit from another year or more at Dortmund?
Absolutely, there's a case to be made. At that age, at a club like Dortmund, who continues to play their youth and play a style of football that suits his high-energy running style, you only see his own value going up. But then that's a risk that you take, and many players take, in staying someplace. And Jan used the example of Cristiano Ronaldo of Manchester United. Now, that worked out perfectly well. But how many other times can we talk about players maybe getting injured, not having the kind of seasons that they hoped, being distracted by the attention and their values going down somewhat? That's the gamble for Jadon Sancho. Now, my concern, just kind of looking in from the outside, is and given Jan was perfectly right in everything that he said about not just Sancho but the other Dortmund players and the haircuts, is that he's getting a little bit too big for his britches. And you wonder if Borussia Dortmund, as good a club and as big a club as they are, the fact that they are continue to trail Bayern Munich season in, season out, it seems, he's not going to accept the kind of responsibility and mature the kind of way that he needs to while he's still there. And maybe he needs the bigger stage. Maybe he needs the brighter lights, really, for him to focus a bit more on what's important, and then he progresses as many expect he would.
All right, thank you guys. Plenty more from the boys on Extra Time. Make sure to get us your questions. Hashtag FC Extra Time on Twitter. Shaka and Jan will be back with all the answers.
Geico has the insurance industry leading app that lets you manage your policy anytime, anywhere, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like animal control, when you're cornered in your garage by an angry possum.
Hi, me again. You guys said you would be here about an hour ago, and I think the possum is starting to get angry. Listen, I thought if I fed it, it would go away, but now it is ripping holes in the drywall and making some sort of nest. Just call me back.
Geico, always there for you with savings and the industry-leading mobile app.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
Big news linking Timo Werner and the Premier League, though not Liverpool as many expected. A release clause for the German striker of 60 million euros will reportedly be activated by Chelsea. This after Liverpool were in the running, but apparently weren't willing to pay the buyout clause. For more, we welcome back Jan Agafjortov. We welcome in Stevie Nicol. Jan, I'll start with you. All signs seem to link Werner with Liverpool. How did Chelsea get in the lead?
Because Liverpool waited too long. Timo Werner wanted to go to Liverpool. He has said that in the public. We've talked with him, and he said, I want to go to Liverpool. But I've been talking to people at the club today at Liverpool, people in and around the club saying that they won't activate that clause. It's too much money for them at the moment. But because of financial reasons, they won't go for Werner at the moment. And then they can't wait, and everything has been delayed anyway because of this season. We should do the European Championship now. Everything has been delayed. Clubs have been losing 50, 60 million pounds of money, and Chelsea have just found a good position to go in there. And as you said, they do the clause, but I'm not sure that it's all done, but it's getting closer that he goes to Chelsea.
Stevie, is it a missed opportunity for Liverpool?
I think it is, yes. Listen, regardless of how good you are, you have to keep making sure you, at the very least, stay where you are. And that means you need competition for places. No question, Werner coming in would have given every one of the front three, as great as they are and have been, that would keep it, that would keep them definitely on their toes. So I'm sure the front three of Liverpool now can breathe a little easier, because it, as Jan says, it looks like it's Chelsea. But yeah, I think Liverpool have slipped up here. I mean, we're saying that, but I wouldn't be surprised though if Werner had something to do with this as well. You know, at the end of the day, when you want to go somewhere, then you kind of make it happen. So it looks to me as though maybe Werner's changed his mind.
Jan, from Werner's perspective, do you think Chelsea's the right fit?
Well, just on Werner, remember that he was waiting, and if he says that he wants to go, he said, I don't want to stay in Germany, I don't want to go to Bayern Munich, I want to go abroad. And this is all about timing. If you're told that we can't afford you now, you have to wait, then you will kind of jump on any wagon. But for me, still, the mats don't go up. I mean, if Liverpool can't afford that player, which... There will be a lot of clubs who will not be activated, be active in this transfer window. And I'm not sure that this seal is done yet. The team Werner, they have talked to Chelsea. Some say that they have agreed his contract. Well, then it should be okay. Then it should be all out there because it's just to activate that clause. So we'll see now what happened. But that team Werner is talking to Chelsea, that is true. He will... From the beginning, get more starting opportunity at Chelsea. But I don't think it will be any. I agree 100% with Stevie. I think that the main thing for a good team is they improve the team when they are doing well because of the competition of the team and new kind of faces in the dressing room and who can give you different skills.
Stevie, what about the Chelsea side of things? Is this the end of the road for Tammy Abraham as a starter? Do you see them working together as a duo?
I don't believe Chelsea. I don't believe Frank and Chelsea are going to change the way they play. And you have to say that it spells the end for Tammy Abraham. I mean, goodness knows what's going through his head because, you know, allegedly Frank's been telling Werner he's building the team around him. So you don't build the team around a wide midfielder or a wide attacking player. You build through the spine, whether it's your centre back, your centre midfielder, your centre forward. So that means straight away. Tammy Abraham's in trouble, and of course it's a good move from Frank. You know, Frank's going to try and take Chelsea from fighting for the top four to trying to compete, and in order to do that you have to get better players and you have to be a sweet talker, and Frank seems to have been a pretty good sweet talker to Werner. So yeah, no question. I would suggest though, if that's the way Frank's going to go, he's going to end up with no physicality in his team whatsoever. You know, you're going to have maybe Pulisic, Werner and Hudson-Odoi is your front three. No physicality. And the middle of the park's the same. So when Frank says, I'm going to build the team around you, he better start signing some physicality as well as ability.
Thank you, Stevie. Thank you, Jan. We'll sure to continue that conversation on tomorrow's show. Dan is back as your host, as is the rest of the crew. Remember, don't miss a single episode of ESPN FC. Brilliant article on the website right now from our very own Sid Lowe about Philippe Coutinho and Barcelona's frankly desperate efforts to sell him. Doesn't seem like there are a lot of big clubs anyway that are lining up for the Brazilian. For more on this, we bring in the author of the article, Sid Lowe, alongside Ale Moreno and Stevie Nichol. Sid, I'll start with you. The one thing that jumped out to me about what you wrote is, as desperate as Barcelona are to get rid of Coutinho now, they were just as desperate to bring him in 2017-2018.
Yeah, and also you can take this beyond Coutinho, can't you? Bear in mind, of course, the context to his signing was the departure of Neymar, the fact that they suddenly had €222 million, but no Neymar. And there was a desperation to replace him, and that led to two signings. One was Dembele, the other was Coutinho. Between them, they cost the club €300 million, and neither has fully succeeded. So much so that they're now in this position where they look at these two players as an economic problem, more even than just a sporting one, and they have huge wages. Coutinho makes €13.8 million a year after tax. And so they're now looking at solutions, and those solutions, as I say, they see them almost purely in economic terms. And of course, it's easier said than done. So, for example, there have been reports this week about interest in allowing Ousmane Dembélé perhaps to go out on loan, which is what Coutinho did last year. And of course, if you're letting players that you've spent over €100 million on each go out on loan, it's because you simply can't find a better solution. And it's a very, very bad position for Barcelona to have found themselves in.
Stevie, as you look back on it, good bit of business for Liverpool. They got €120 million plus €40 million in add-ons. It's not just the money they brought in, though, what the club did with it.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can criticise Barcelona for overpaying, but what they did at the time seemed the right thing to do. I don't remember anybody complaining about anything other than just the price tag. You know, this guy around the world was looked upon as the next big thing. And what he had done at Liverpool, everybody agreed, because he looked like the next big thing. Now, unfortunately, some players can't handle the biggest stage. And that's Coutinho's problem. If you read Sid's article, it tells you exactly that. Questioning all the time, you know, asking his players if he's doing the things right, listening to the crowd, listening to the boos, listening to the criticism. Listen, when you play for a big team, you have to be able to shut all that out. You have to be in your own little bubble, and what goes on around you, you don't take any notice of it, whether it's good or whether it's bad. And some players, since the game began, can do that at a big club, and some can't. And it looks like Coutinho can't do it at a big club.
Ale, was it just the pressure? He was 25 years old when he got to Barcelona. How do we explain the wall that Coutinho seemingly run into?
Yeah, there are a couple of interesting things about Coutinho. One of them is how steep and how quick the drop-off has been. He went from being a top player at Liverpool to, well, he was going to be the solution that Sid was just talking about. He was going to cover that hole that Neymar left. And then from there, with some early positive returns, if you will, for Barcelona, to them struggles, to then it just fell apart. The wheels just came off and he just kind of disappeared. And so the second thing that I think was surprising is that once he went off to Copa America this past summer, I thought, you know what, maybe this is what he needed. He goes back to Brazil. He has a pretty good tournament. The team wins the competition. He feels good about himself. He's scoring important goals for the national team. And so now we're going to see a better version of him. And it just didn't happen. It didn't happen for Barcelona. It didn't happen for Bayern Munich. The loan didn't quite work. And we just didn't see the same level of player that we had seen at Liverpool. And so what happens now is that nobody wants to touch him. Nobody at a top-tier level wants to touch him. One, because of the salaries, but two, because of the evidence that you have seen, the recent evidence, and that is a player who is struggling with confidence. So one of the things that I thought was really interesting from Sid's article was the premise that maybe for Barcelona, after you go all the digging and research and investigating and trying to reach out to teams and see if you can work out a deal, maybe the best solution for Barcelona, whether they like it or not, is the fact that you may just have to play this guy. You may just have to see whether he can be the guy that you thought he was going to be for you. But it feels like the relationship between the two, between Coutinho and Barcelona, is broken down, and it doesn't feel like this is a player that can thrive at the Camp Nou.
You know, when I was talking earlier, and I was saying some players can't play at the big on the biggest stage. What I mean by that is, when Coutinho in particular came to Liverpool, Liverpool were not expected to be at the very top. You know, Liverpool were on the rise, and it's very easy when you're on the rise and you're chasing and everybody's behind you and everybody's encouraging you, and it doesn't matter what you do. If you do something wrong, it's, well, don't worry. And when you do something good, it's, oh, that's fantastic. So when I say the biggest stage, when you go to a Barcelona or you go to any club that's at the very top and you have to produce the best every single minute of every single hour of every single day and every single game, that's what I mean when I say the likes of Coutinho can't handle it.
Sid, real quick, any chance of a comeback?
Yeah, I think the Barcelona context was, of course, he was trying to replace Neymar and Iniesta at the same time. I think, and as Ali's pointed out, and this was the kind of final conclusion of the piece in a way, is that if you're in a position where you don't have a good exit strategy, then yeah, play him. You know, it's a different manager now, it's a different context, it's a different style, it's different players around him. Maybe the best thing Barcelona can do is that rather than try and recover the money, is to try and recover the player emotionally and see if you can get him playing again.
Very well, gentlemen. We'll leave it right there. Plenty more on Coutinho wherever he ends up over on the Transfer Talk page on our website. Make sure to bookmark it for all the latest news and developments over at ESPNFC.com. 38 years ago today that Diego Maradona moved from Boca Juniors to Barcelona for, get this, a world record transfer fee then of £5 million. He was only 22 years old. For more, we bring in Sid Lowe and Alejandro Moreno. Sid, I'll start with you. It's funny. You think of Maradona, you think of him in an Argentina shirt, a Napoli shirt. You don't think of him in Barcelona. When you think of his time in Barcelona, it's a lot more about how he left than how he arrived.
Yeah, and there is a sense of unfulfilled potential there. When he did play and when he was fit, that he did extraordinary things. And people remember, for example, an ovation at the Santiago Bernabeu. Some of the performances were off the scale. And players still talk about his first day when he walked into the dressing room, saw a ball of socks rolled up and started flicking it into the air and doing kick-ups with it. But he wasn't able to produce everything that he could have done. He had hepatitis, of course. He had that broken ankle in the clash against Athletic Bilbao. And his career ended at Barcelona with that extraordinary Copa del Rey final against Athletic, which ended in what was literally a kung fu fight on the pitch involving all the players. And there's a real sense of sadness about how it ended at Barcelona, because he could have been brilliant there as well. It didn't work out. And I suppose in a way football will look back on this and say, well, so much the better, because of course what he achieved at Napoli was just so extraordinary.
Ale, it's a pretty good resume for a player of his so-called forgotten era is at Barcelona, isn't it?
Yeah, it was a turbulent time for Diego Maradona at Barcelona. And if you follow Maradona's career and if you have read a little bit about him, it has been largely reported that that's at the time that he went to Barcelona is when he started dabbling with cocaine and drugs and so on and so forth. And we know how important that became for him and his career and his downfall as his career wore on. I think off the field, he was having issues. On the field, the fact that you get your leg snapped in half by Andoni Goikoetxea and after a tackle that then he was dubbed as the butcher of Bilbao, el carnicero de Bilbao, Andoni Goikoetxea, he became more famous about that tackle than he did about what he was as a player. And Maradona then was out for a long period of time. And then once he comes back, he gives you signs of the player that he may have been or could have been for Barcelona for years to come. And then the lasting image that we have from him, Barcelona, is doing spinning kicks in this fight that Sid was just talking about. And so it's difficult to really to sum up what Barcelona was at the time that Diego Maradona was there. But certainly for him, you can see it from his perspective that it was turbulent, inconsistent, and then it just didn't quite work out the way that I think he would have wanted, that Barcelona would have wanted, and in the end it was best for him to exit stage right and then go find something else in Napoli, where obviously he blew up and became the player that we all sort of beloved and admire, of course. And then we also know what he became off the field too.
Sid, nice little anecdote. Barcelona beat Sheffield United out for his signature. Can you imagine the alternate history?
It's extraordinary, isn't it? The idea of Diego Maradona ending up at Sheffield United, it would have been really quite something. It would be fascinating to know how things would have gone, how different things could have been. And can you imagine? I mean, we might be looking back, you know, and saying, wow, Sheffield United, they completely dominated the 80s and the early 90s. You know, the best team English football has ever seen. It wasn't to be. South Yorkshire was not to be the home of the finest football on the planet. And I think Sheffield Wednesday fans, of which I should point out at this stage, my sister is one, are probably quite pleased about that.
All right, thank you, Sid. Thank you, Ale. A reminder then, if you ever miss an episode of the show, just download the podcast, available daily on the website with all your favorite features, including extra time.
Geico gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday. Social security, is that a thing? Hey, mom, what is my social security number? Mom? Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
Geico, always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
Napa Know-How.
Get all the quality parts you need at your locally owned Napa. Because right now, when you order from Napa online, you can pick up curbside at your local store in just 30 minutes. Or get your order delivered direct to your door with free one-day shipping on over 160,000 quality parts when you spend $50 or more. Quality parts delivered quickly and safely. That's Napa Know-How.
Napa Know-How.
At participating stores, standard ground shipping and exclusions apply.
We have labor peace in Major League Soccer, but it came awfully close to a work stoppage. This is from Don Garber yesterday discussing Major League Soccer's lockout threat to the players. Quote, that's the first time in the 25-year history of our league that we ever had to get to that point. It's not something that I did without a lot of thought and without a lot of concern and a lot of understanding as to what impact that would have on our players and on the negotiation. But it was something as the leader of this league that I believed is necessary in order for us to get to the point today that we have reached an agreement. That was countered by Jeff Larenowitz, current player in Major League Soccer. Quote, I was disgusted when I read the email. I thought it was a bullying tactic. I think it showed incredible understanding and resolve from the players to stand up to that. For more, we bring in Jeff Carlisle and Hercules Gomez, two guys who have been all over this. Jeff, I'll start with you. How close did we actually come to a work stoppage?
I don't know that we came that close. I mean, I think there was always a sense that a deal was going to get done. I mean, if you look at the competing offers that came from the league and from the union, I think what we were witnessing was a kind of a gradual meeting in the middle, which I think is why everyone was surprised that the league went the route of threatening a lockout. I mean, these negotiations were moving in a positive direction. To hear the league tell it, well, we needed some urgency around the talks because there were time constraints around Orlando, and you know they were claiming that the players were introducing some items into the deal that weren't agreed upon before. I mean, I think you got to take that with a grain of salt. I think Jeff Larenowitz is right. I think the league tried to bully the players. And I question really how much the league gained by doing that in these last few offers, the last few rounds of negotiation. I mean, in terms of the revenue sharing agreement, okay, they moved from 10% to 12.5%. In terms of the pay cut, 8.75 to 7.5. I mean, you know, these are pretty small differences when you get right down to it. I mean, I do think the force majeure clause was a huge sticking point, and the players stuck to their guns on that issue and got what they wanted. So, I mean, I think the league really didn't need to go that route, and we'll see down the road just how much damage has been done in terms of the relationship between the league and the union membership. I mean, I think, you know, some considerable damage has been done for sure.
Herc, let's go back to April 17th. On this very show, you said, maybe we'll see a lockout. I happen to know some people in MLS headquarters were very upset at your use of the word lockout. How did we get from there to then this past weekend when they were threatening the players with the very lockout you had mentioned?
Very interesting, Seb. Very interesting. Let me give you a few words that I've heard from said players. Angry, disgusted, slap in the face, blindsided. A big word. Now, a bit ago, there was a call, a Zoom call between some of the players and Don Garber. Michael Bradley was one of the players on said Zoom call, and he had mentioned a lockout. Don Garber said, no, Michael, nobody is talking lockout. He guaranteed nobody was talking lockout. Well, here we are. Yesterday, Don Garber himself said it was his idea to lock the players out if they did not accept. That's his verbiage from yesterday. These players are angry. They feel blindsided. And it's this force majeure. It's this thing. It's a single thing right there that really got the players to unite. They got the players, really, for the first time in its union's history. I've been a union rep in Major League Soccer. I've been part of this union. I've been part of this league. I know how wishy-washy these players can get. But when we talk about how realistic it was that they were going to walk, it was very realistic. For the first time in their history, they showed unity. For the first time, because of the owners doing, they stood up for themselves.
Jeff, we have a new five-year CBA. Anytime you talk about a collective bargaining agreement, there's this need to assign winners and losers. Who won this round? Was it the players or was it the owners?
Well, I think if you had to pick one side, I think you'd have to pick the owners. The players gave up a lot. I mean, they gave up a significant percentage in the first year of this revenue sharing agreement for the next broadcast rights deal. They took some salary cuts that are pretty small in the short term, but then you start tacking on these other items, the cap on bonuses in 2020. You look at the force majeure clause, which is now in the CBA. So, and then you think about, well, what did the players gain? I guess you could make the statement that, you know, the players are, they have a ratified CBA, they have labor peace for the next 5 years, and they're still getting paid, which is no small feat in the middle of a pandemic. But I don't see where the players gain. I mean, what I see, especially when you compare it to the previous CBA that was negotiated in February, I see the league clawing back a lot of the wins that the players had. And, you know, again, we'll see how this works out going forward. But I think that's also why the players are angry a little bit. I think there's acknowledgement that they did the best they could in this situation, especially because owners can afford to miss a paycheck or two. Players, the vast majority of the players in this league can't. And so, you know, from that standpoint, I think the players are pleased that they're still getting paid and now they can begin returning to the field. But just in terms of the economics, I mean, you'd have to say that the players lost quite a bit.
Herc, do you agree you feel the players lost in this?
No, I don't feel the players lost in this. Listen, this could have very easily blown up in the players' face. We have a situation in this country where there are over 25 million unemployed, where the majority of professional sports leagues and jobs out there, if you're lucky to have a job, are taking huge pay cuts. We're talking about upwards of 50%, if not more. Here you have the players who get out of this a 7.5% pay cut. And the villains in this movie, the bad guys, are the owners. Let's remind everybody that this was a CBA that they themselves negotiated with the league and the league agreed upon. And then all of a sudden the league says, wait a second, it's not been ratified. What if we run it back a second? What if we add this force majeure that's unprecedented? Which in this force majeure was unprecedented in any professional sports league. All of a sudden, if five teams of a possible 30, because this is a five-year CBA, have a drop in 25% attendance, we're going to reduce salaries? That's what they're saying? They could have used any type of language, but that right there was a slap in the face. That right there drew public opinion in favor of the players. The players, whether you believe it or not, whether you say the concessions of the shared revenue wasn't what they wanted, they got that in there. No concessions. You can't compare the players' shared revenue today with baseball because how many CBA cycles have gone for the NBA or for the NBA or Major League Baseball or NFL players to get there? They finally got it on the table. That's a huge win, like free agency was in its moment. This is a win for the players no matter how you cut it up. For the first time in their history, they showed a backbone. For the first time, they stood up to the owners. And if you look at public perception, the big losers in this are the owners.
We have a new CBA. We also reportedly will have a Major League Soccer tournament later this summer in Orlando. Jeff, it sounds like a lot of the details here are still being worked out. What are some of the key details that you see left before we have a finalized Orlando plan?
Well, I still think there's some questions around testing. You know, how often it's going to happen, and more importantly, who is going to be tested. I mean, to test the players and the support staff is kind of a no-brainer. But, you know, in terms of kind of the peripheral figures in this event, you know, the hotel staff, you know, how's the food going to be prepared? I think things of that sort are still a little murky. So, and let's face it, I mean, the players are taking a risk by participating in this event. I mean, you can talk about social distancing and making sure the proper protocols are in place. But, you know, they're going to be getting on a plane and they're going to be going to a state where COVID-19 cases are increasing at a pretty rapid rate at the moment. So, you know, I think that the testing is going to be the big issue. And, you know, just making sure that the players are in an environment where they're safe and also not going to get injured. I think that's a concern for them as well.
Herc, on the field, quality-wise, these guys have been off for like 3 or 4 months. Reportedly, they'll arrive in Central Florida in late June for an early July start, maybe 2 weeks of kind of team preseason. What kind of quality do you think we're going to see in Orlando?
It's going to be very difficult to say, Sebi. I mean, you have to assume that these guys have been professional enough to do what they can on their own to stay with at least a good physical presence. But it's not like you can actually get that match fitness, that game rhythm, that sharpness because you haven't been together. There are some teams that still haven't returned to training individually within their own markets. So that's a disadvantage of those teams. No matter how you slice it, the quality of play will be affected. And listen, we spoke about testing. Jeff hit the nail on the head right there. There are a lot of variables the players don't have at this moment under their control. Sure. They can control what they do, how they distance themselves socially, the testing that they get. But the hotel staff's going to have temperature checks. That's about the extent of their testing. That hotel staff will then go home to their families, and you can't control what they do. Then reintroduce them into this bubble, this variable. Then you have the NBA. You're going to have 22 other teams there, other franchises there with their own organization and people within those teams. They're also going to be within this bubble. That's a lot of variables, and players, I mean, should be worried. It's their health. It's their families. They're going to be away from said families. Some players who have pregnant partners have the option of going. It's a very difficult decision, very difficult thing, no matter how you slice it.
Plenty more on Major League Soccer's so-called Orlando plan and the fact that the league avoided a work stoppage over on our ESPN FC YouTube channel. Make sure to subscribe and check out all the great content over there. That's it then for this edition of ESPN FC. Thanks to all our guests, Jan, Shaka, Sid, Alice, Stevie, Jeff, and of course, Hercules Gomez. Stick around. Extra Time is up next. Our victims, or guests as we like to call them, Shaka Hislop and Jan Argafjortal. Hey there, everybody. Welcome into this edition of Extra Time here on ESPN FC. Glad to be with you. I'm Sebastian Salazar. We got Jan Argafjortal. We got Shaka Hislop. And as always, we have your questions off of Twitter. Gentlemen, thank you for the time. Good to be with you. Pearson asked the first question. Oh, man, already we're going to get off to a rough start here. Which was the better side, Jan's Norway team or Shaka's Trinidad and Tobago team? Did you ever get to face each other internationally or at club level? Jan, you're the newest part of our show, so I'll give you the honor to go first.
Shaka, we have played each other, have we? Or I'm much younger than you.
Not at an international level. Not at an international level, I don't think, Jan.
No, we don't. No, I think that Trinidad Tobago, I think Norway, when we qualified for the World Cup in 1994, it was the first time since 1938. So it was a long time. And Trinidad and Tobago did also had a good generation coming forward. So, but I will always have to go for Norway. On my big brag of my time is that we were second on the FIFA world ranking, and I'm always saying I'm not bragging about that because Brazil was better than us.
When were you second in the FIFA rankings?
Yeah, you have to call bluff, though, my friend.
Also, FIFA rankings.
I've got to check this here, Jan. I do not remember Norway being anything less than 81st.
Sorry, fact will kill any discussion. Fact kills any discussion.
If you were second, hands up, I'll take that. But Jan's team against the 2006 Trinidad Tobago team, there's only ever one winner, and it wasn't Jan.
There you go. CONCACAF, well done. Hey, Jan, do you know where you were on Sunday, June 19th, 1994? This is not one of the questions. I'm just, there's a question for you.
This is in 1994, and the date was, yes, I was on my way home.
June 19th, 1994. Yes, that's when Norway played Mexico in the 94 World Cup.
We did.
At RFK Stadium here in Washington, D.C. That, right at that stadium right there in my picture.
Exactly. And before, at the press conference, I only got one question. What do you think of a Jorge Campos? What do you think of a Jorge Campos? That was the only question, the goalkeeper. And at 0-0, I had a great volley. And by the way, what a fantastic save he had. But we ended up winning 1-0. And we thought we were off for a good start. But then in the group of death, they sent us home after three games.
Oh, what a fun jaunt down memory lane. Good times, good times. Jack, great question. Jack asks, who has the higher ceiling international club? Christian Pulisic or Gio Reyna? Jan, I'll give you a first crack at this one, too.
Ooh. Then you have the ceiling. You should go to Xhaka first. Ceiling, meaning the highest rating, or?
Yeah, who do you think has the biggest potential?
Potential, wow. Well, Pulisic is established. He did ever so well in Dortmund. Then he got a bit problem with his injury, and then he came back, and then he went to Chelsea. Reina, wow, what a talent he is. That is one is hard to tell, because compared with him, Pulisic is getting old. But I'm very impressed the way Pulisic has also done with the national team. But two great, great players. I can't be sure who got better. I would say Pulisic is the best at the moment, but the potential here, Reina can go all the way.
Xhaka, who's got the higher ceiling?
I'm going to agree with Jan here. Listen, when you see Reina play, you understand his potential. He certainly is one for the future. But as we sit right now, despite how things have maybe stalled relatively for Pulisic over the last couple of years, I still see him as the natural leader in that U.S. men's national team. And that's not an easy mantle to sit atop. Yet he's done so very well over the last few years, despite his struggles at club level. As good as we've seen from Reina, you know, it's a lot to ask of anybody. And Pulisic has done it. So therefore, I'm going to lean Christian Pulisic for the time being, at the very least.
Next question comes from one of our Extra Time All-Stars, Dan the Orange Man. Jan, who is the best player that you ever played with?
That is a quite easy one. Although I've played with some good players, I played with Ravanelli when he came to England after winning the Champions League, and he scored 30 goals for Middlesbrough. But by far the best one I played with was Juninho, the Brazilian, the small Brazilian. He came. There are a lot of Juninhos in the football world, but this is the Harry Potter one. He came to us. He was just amazing. The way he took on people in training, the way he took them on at games, and rightly so, later than winning the World Cup. And he was just an amazing player. I've never seen something like it. I thought that I worked hard and had a couple of skills, and compared with him, it looked like I never played football before.
Another one for you, Jan. This from Benjamin. Julian Nagelsmann is Klopp's perfect successor, isn't he? What do you think? Why are we trying to get rid of Jurgen Klopp already?
Well, he's a successor for a lot of managers. But as you rightly say, Nagelsmann is one of the greatest prospects. And I've told the story many times with the Hoffenheim sporting director, Alex Rosen, that I know very well, when he told me many years ago, and he said there is a young kid training in our academy. He will be one of the best coaches in the world. He was like 26 or something then. That was Julian Nagelsmann. And I think that people should look to Germany, because a lot of the great managers of the future are now in the Bundesliga with Rose or Nagelsmann or whoever the names are. If he goes to Liverpool, that is all about timing. But Nagelsmann is a guy, he's a voice of a new generation, and the way he's doing his training, the way he sets up his training session are second to none. So we will hear about this guy for many, many years. Of course, he's still a kid now, so of course we will hear about him.
Jan, another one for you. What is your favorite memory from when you were playing at Middlesbrough?
Wow.
None.
I think that must be, I was fortunate to come to Middlesbrough at the time when we were leaving Ayresome Park, the old stadium, going into the Riverside Stadium. I made a Buzz Aldrin goal at that new stadium, Craig Higgins had scored the first goal. I scored the second goal against Chelsea. It was a fantastic game, and it was a great time to be in Middlesbrough. And Shaka will tell you, at a time when we had Middlesbrough with 30,000, Sunderland with 40,000-50,000, and Newcastle with 50,000-60,000 in more or less the same area. It's a very passionate football area. It's painful to see that Sunderland and Middlesbrough at the moment are not in the top flight, but it wasn't a very exciting time to be at the place, moving into a new stadium. I was the record signing, and 2 years later, I wasn't even top five. So things were going very rapidly at Middlesbrough at that time.
All right, then our final question. Would you like to have won a big, sparkly diamond ring like the NFL Super Bowl winners, or stick with the traditional winner's medals more commonly seen in football? Shaka, what are you taking?
I'm a traditionalist in that regard. I just feel... Maybe it's more to do with the images I grew up seeing as a football fan. You know, walking the steps to whatever stadium it was, and have fans around you, and lifting the trophy, whatever trophy it is, and having that medal put around your neck. That's what I grew up seeing, and that's what I relate with most and best. So for me, that's what I would go with. I mean, the ring is nice. But again, I'm nostalgic for how it was, or and in many respects, how it still is in football.
Jan, you can't walk around with a medal around your neck. You can walk around with a ring on. Which one would you take?
Well, as a Norwegian being second on the FIFA world ranking, I was very close to winning the World Cup trophy. So I will go for the World Cup trophy, as Shaka will never with Trinidad and Tobago be that close. So I will go with the World Cup trophy.
I'm writing FIFA.
Only extra time could validate FIFA rankings.
I am writing a letter of protest to FIFA about this.
All right, gentlemen, we'll leave it there for today. Thank you very much for your time. Please continue to send in your tweets, hashtag FC Extra Time. We're all back for tomorrow's show. Actually, I'm not. Dan Thomas is back in the hot seat. He'll be running the show tomorrow on Friday. Don't miss it.